welcome to episode 6 of Strong Style History here on Place to Be Nation, the podcast, Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed. I am your host, Jeffrey Wessel. I run the Strong Style Story blog at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. You can also find me at Strong Style Story on Twitter without the E in style. And now our main show, the Strong Style Story podcast, is now a part of the Place to Be Nation family. So please tune in. With me today is our usual producer, but making his debut on Strong Style History as a broadcaster is Chris Damasceno. Chris, hello.
Hey, how's it going, Jeff? Hello, everybody. Glad to be part of history, finally. I've been producing the couple of episodes, doing the editing and everything in between. Didn't get a chance to be a part of those, mainly because I was either working, had real-life stuff going on, so it's exciting to actually be here for a weekend and be able to record, especially when we're so close to G1 Special in USA, as we're getting about 2 weeks out from that particular time when we're recording this, and we get to talk about something that has a lot of correlations to G1 Special in the USA, and we'll go over those here momentarily with you.
That is correct. Our topic today is the New Japan Invasion 2011 Attack on East Coast Tour that took place in May of 2011 as a co-production between New Japan Pro Wrestling and Jersey All Pro Wrestling. Now, this was not the very first time that New Japan had ever set foot on American soil. One of the biggest examples of that was the World Wrestling Peace Festival that took place in the Los Angeles Sports Arena on Saturday, June the 1st in 1996. That was run with help from New Japan Pro Wrestling, as well as WCW, the NWA, Michinoku Pro, and in a rarity for a business with strong politics as Lucha, both CMLL and AAA had involvement in that show. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We are here to talk about the Invasion 2011 tour, because there are quite a lot of similarities between this and the forthcoming G1 Special in USA shows that are going to be taking place on July the 1st and 2nd in Long Beach, California. Notably, the promotion is running multiple shows as opposed to just one event, and much like the G1 Special shows, the Invasion 2011 tour, Attack on East Coast, was the crowning of the inaugural IWGP Intercontinental Champion, which, you know, now in 2017, it seems so long ago, but this is where they were back in the days. Now, the roots of these shows can actually be found on January the 4th, 2011, which was Wrestle Kingdom 5 in Tokyo Dome. During that show, Jeff Hardy defeated Tetsuya Naito for the TNA World Heavyweight title, and it was a horrific match, to say the least. No fault of Tetsuya Naito's either.
No.
I think if you go back in the history of Jeff Hardy, we could pretty much figure out why that might have been. But for the most part, New Japan cut ties with TNA at that
particularly
point.
Particularly after. There was definitely not a whole lot. TNA had been partnering with New Japan for the longest time there, for a couple of years. But that was kind of the culmination of a lot of issues, which saw them TNA really not treating some of their guys that they were sending there the way they should have. No Limit, which was Yujiro Takahashi and Tetsuya Naito coming together as an example of that. Kazuchika Okada at the time still being in his young boy excursion to TNA and not having the best of successes with them during the whole entire process. And really, for a Wrestle Kingdom match, Hardy and Naito, they just didn't really click in that particular match a couple of years back. And just that was kind of almost the beginning of the end to an extent. So,
but in the meantime, New Japan had established on October the 3rd, 2010, they had announced a deal with Jersey All Pro to host the first ever proper New Japan tour in the USA. So the Attack on East Coast tour was actually announced during Wrestle Kingdom 5, even though, you know, so it seems maybe we had to revise that slightly, that the TNA thing actually was it was coincidental almost.
Yeah, it was the beginning of the end to an extent, because they still had Okada doing all of the Yeah, exactly. He was still there during the time in which this entire three-day show set of events ended up happening on. So it was kind of the beginning of the end, where you kind of could start seeing that maybe this wasn't going to last as long as it was, and wasn't that it was just ended immediately there on the spot after that particular match. But some people might point to it and say, okay, this is kind of the point where they start eking away from TNA to an extent.
Yes, to a very large extent. So
it's an interesting time, because I mean as we mentioned the announcement with Jersey Pro was made in October. They established the partnership of some sort, but the actual official dates of the show and locations weren't something that ended up getting announced until Wrestle Kingdom 5 ended up happening in the first place. And the three places that got those particular shows were Rahway, New Jersey, New York City, and Philadelphia,
and the good old ECW arena. So so on May the 12th, a press conference was held at a Ramada Hotel in Newark, New Jersey, which, you know, it was your typical New Japan press conference. But there was a little bit of a kerfuffle at this when Rhino, you know, the ECW and WWE stalwart, came by and threatened to destroy Togi Makabe during these shows. And it seemed like not all of the workers of the Ramada Hotel were in on this, and it looked like they were actually close to calling the cops on this.
God, that would have been even more interesting, to be honest with you, if these cops just suddenly show up halfway through that press conference trying to figure out what the hell was going on.
So, yeah. But, of course, the centerpiece of this tour was the crowning of the very first IWGP Intercontinental Champion, which we know now, in present times, that bell has now seen, stellar runs with that title by both Shinsuke Nakamura and Tetsuya Naito. But this was the beginnings of it. The first show happened on May the 13th in Rahway, New Jersey, at the Rahway Rec Center. The attendance was 587 persons. And the show was taped for Samurai TV. The show started with Homicide and Low Ki beating Jushin Thunder Liger and Tiger Mask 4.
Which, again, interesting opening all around. Something to keep in mind as well, too, is that majority of the New Japan talents were there, but then there was also a couple of the Jersey All Pro Wrestling workers like Charlie Haas, Dan Math, Homicide, Low Ki, and Rhino that took part in it. And initially, Josh Daniels, who was another name under that roster, ended up being a late replacement for Tama Tonga, who was sidelined with an injury at the time.
That's correct.
After part of the tournament. So definitely a good mix of the two, but it was definitely a New Japan focused amount of talent. You just kind of threw in the Gaijins as an extra for the matches and such. So,
continuing on the first night, Satoshi Kojima defeated a then independent working, he was still working DDT at the time as well.
Yeah,
Kenny Omega.
Yeah, and he had ties to Jersey All Pro Wrestling at the time too, doing a couple of shows for them. So it makes sense as to why they included him in the role of that as well. So. But yeah, very interesting that a young Kenny Omega squaring off against Cozy, and
yeah,
this happened out of it.
The next match was an 8-man tag team with the names in this match are amazing. Apollo 55, who were of course Prince Devitt and Ryusuke Taguchi, teaming with Bad Intentions, who were Giant Bernard and Machine Gun Carl Anderson. And they would defeat a Chaos Squad of Shinsuke Nakamura, Jado, Gato, and Davey Richards.
Yeah. the dark days in which Davey Richards was considered a Chaos member. Dear Christ.
Yeah, well, again, sometimes sometimes you go through these old New Japan shows and you just kind of had to scratch your head at some of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first IWGP Intercontinental title tournament match, Yujiro Takahashi, fresh off of the team of No Limit, defeated Hideo Saito, which, if you don't remember Hideo Saito, he was a young lion who was off on excursion to Puerto Rico at the time. He's Mitsuhide Hirasawa. You would know him now better as either Captain New Japan or Bone Soldier.
Yeah.
But at the time, this is what he was going as.
Using a tongue and death grip as a finisher and everything on top of it, which...
Yeah, indeed. The next match for the IWGP Intercontinental title was Tetsuya Naito beating Josh Daniels, who, as you said, was a stand-in for Tama Tonga.
Which, again, yeah, definitely they needed to get Naito an opponent in this case for the tournament, and lo and behold, it just ended up working out that way.
The following match, Toru Yano beat Dan Maff. Now, I don't really remember Dan Maff, I have to be honest.
Yeah, it wasn't a particular name that I had been looking out for in any way, shape, or form with that, so just he was somebody that worked with Jersey Pro in this case, and yeah, it was a thing that happened. But for me in particular, I just figured Yano at that particular time, too, wasn't the sweet, lovable comedy thief Yano that we knew and loved either. We were talking more of very, a little more vicious, not much more for the comedy antics side of things, more likely to take a chair and just start beating you with it.
Yeah, this is when he was still very much a villainous character. So, yeah, mm-hmm. This was that time period. And back when, you know, Chaos were still far and away a heel unit, too.
A heel unit and a very Inoki-centric kind of unit with Nakamura leading them in that regard.
Indeed. The final IWGP Intercontinental title tournament match that day was MVP, if you remember him, defeating young strapping young lion Kazuchika Okada.
And again, him and Saito were the two names that were recalled from their particular excursions to be a part of this tournament, which just makes this so much more interesting given how far they've come in the past, like, 6 years since.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the, well, we will get into that as we go on. The main event of that night, Charlie Haas and Rhino beat the team of Hiroshi Tanahashi and Togi Makabe.
Yeah, in which Rhino ended up pinning Makabe just to keep building the storyline that they started during that particular press conference, with the two of them trying to just mangle each other. And along with that, it also set up something for night two between Tanahashi and Haas, which would go down in New York City, which we're going to be covering next.
Yes, following that, the next day was on May the 14th, 2011, at Basketball City in New York City, in actual NYC. This was also taped for Samurai TV. So this was day two of this event. The opening match, Kenny Omega defeating Josh Daniels,
mm-hmm.
which I guess again, maybe shouldn't surprise anybody.
No, not really. Given that the guy was the fill-in for Tama Tonga in this case, I was just expecting him at that particular point to be the guy who was basically doing the favors for everybody that they wanted in that particular tour. So
exactly. The following match, a six-man tag, Jushin Liger, Tiger Mask 4, and Dan Maff defeating a Chaos team of Shinsuke Nakamura, Jado, and Gato.
Mm-hmm. So. Definitely. Again, interesting in the fact as to all these different... For whatever reason, Wikipedia has it weirdly listed as an 8-man tag, even though there was only 6 men in it, but tiny little mistakes, I guess. But
indeed. The next match was a 6-man tag. There was one before that. My apologies. Bad Intentions, the good old team of Giant Bernard and Machine Gun Carl Anderson, beating Satoshi Kojima and Hideo Saito. I can pretty much guess who took the fall on that one.
Yeah, just...
I can also guess
something's never changed.
I can also guess who took the fall in this next match, in which Davey Richards, Homicide, and Rhino defeated Togi Makabe, Ryusuke Taguchi, and Kazuchika Okada.
And it's so weird. I mean, I know we're talking 2011 at this point, and Okada still being in his excursion, but it's just between all three of those names now compared to 6 years ago, it's just hard to believe that it would be Okada taking that fall. But lo and behold.
You know, I mean, time has a way of getting away from itself. You know, it's So the next match was the first title match of the tour, in which Prince Devitt defended the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title against Low Ki.
Seventh defense on top of it too, so he was on a roll at that particular time.
Yeah, and this was like, and we were still 2 years out from, well, actually 1 year out, excuse me, about 1 year out from Bullet Club too. So this was back when, yeah, again, this was during Apollo 55 era.
Yeah, the Apollo 55 era, in an era where Devitt really was the kingpin of that entire junior heavyweight division with both belts.
Right. You
know, not only just the singles, but the tag one on top of it. So.
Right. So, yeah, this was the time when Devitt was ruling the junior scene. The next match was a semifinal match for the IWGP Intercontinental Title Tournament, in which Toriano defeated young Yujiro Takahashi.
Mm-hmm. Again, interesting times all around.
And then the following match was another IWGP Intercontinental title match. MVP beat the other half of No Limit, Tetsuya Naito, to set up a final of MVP versus Toriano.
Again, interesting names. All together, just very, very interesting names.
It was, yeah, I mean, this was still an interesting time for New Japan. The wave of change was about to hit them, but they just really didn't know it yet. And then the main event that night in New York City, Hiroshi Tanahashi defended the IWGP Heavyweight Championship against Charlie Haas.
And surprisingly enough for some people, this was not the first time that the IWGP Heavyweight Championship has been defended in U.S. soil. 10 years prior to that, Scott Norton actually had a pair of defenses February 11th. It would be in this case, just because with the cage match they have it where it's day, month, and year, so that's my apologies on that. We're looking at November 2nd and November 9th, where Scott Norton is listed as having defended the IWGP Heavyweight title against Van Hammer and Lodi.
That's correct.
Those are two defenses that he has under his belt there, and those were the first two defenses the belt had in America. So this would have been defense number 3 overall that happened in U.S. soil.
That is correct. And, of course, there will be another IWGP Heavyweight title defense in L.A. when Kazuchika Okada will face Cody Rhodes. In the main event of night one of those shows.
Which we do discuss in Strong Style Stories' latest episode, which I'm sure will be available for you guys to listen to through here. So check that out as well, especially since we're now official.
So, continuing, night three happened at what was then known as the Asylum Arena, but it's the good old ECW Arena in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This happened on May the 15th. This is the final day of the show of the tour. The first match of that show, Tetsuya Naito defeated Hideo Saito, the Young Lion excursionee.
Mm-hmm.
So
Naito getting his wins, Saito doing his jobs.
Life goes on. Next up was an 8-man tag match in which a Chaos team of Shinsuke Nakamura, Yujiro Takahashi, Jado, and Gedo beat Tiger Mask 4, Charlie Haas, Josh Daniels, and Kazuchika Okada.
Poor Okada yet again.
Yeah. Again, young lion on excursion.
Yep.
It happens. The next match was the Jersey All Pro Wrestling Light Heavyweight title, in which Kenny Omega defeated Jushin Liger for the title. Mm-hmm. Jushin Liger was the champion at the time, and Kenny Omega beat him.
Yep, and I believe the story was Liger had won it sometime around December of the previous year, had been making appearances here and there, and that was just because Kenny, being a regular to both companies, ended up taking that.
Kenny Omega was, this is back when Kenny Omega was still very much an indie worker, and he was in DDT too as part of the Golden Lovers with Kota Ibushi.
Mm-hmm.
The following match, another tag team match in which Bad Intentions, Giant Bernard, and Machine Gun Carl Anderson beat Satoshi Kojima and Dan Maff.
But here's the interesting thing out of that particular match is that once Bad Intentions did beat Maff and Kojima, Lance Archer actually made his official debut under the New Japan banner by attacking Kojima. And in the process, Kojima was saved by MVP, who... And then attack him together, but there's a whole longer story.
A longer story behind that, which is Kojima at one point had his own unit called Kojima Gun. Well, long story short, around this time, Kojima Gun betrayed Kojima and installed as their new leader Minoru Suzuki. Hence, we get the current incarnation of Suzuki Gun. So that's the roots of that, which you have to feel bad because I think this is like the second time that an entire unit has betrayed Kojima. Because I think that's what happened with GBH, and that's how most of GBH became Chaos.
Yeah, that's, as I recall, he has not had the best luck with stables. But the interesting part of it and why MVP factions into it.
Not to mention the brief time when Kojima was part of Voodoo Murders in All Japan.
Oh God, yeah. We're going far with these ones, but it is called Strong Style History for a reason. To touch base back on the whole Kojima MVP situation, the fact is MVP was a part of Kojima Gun at the time, and he chose not to really take sides when Suzuki kind of led that particular rebellion. They turned the Suzuki Gun, so Archer deciding to come in and attack Kojima and MVP making the save was kind of MVP's way of saying, hey, I got your back in this.
All right. The next match was the third and final New Japan title match on these shows, in which Apollo 55, Prince Devitt, and Ryusuke Taguchi defeated Homicide and Low Ki to retain the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships.
Again, Apollo 55 being on a run, Devitt again being that kingpin of the junior division at the time.
It was different times.
It's interesting just thinking about it because, again, Devitt had a very successful career prior to really taking off with Bullet Club on the junior side.
Yeah, it seems so long ago now. It really does. Even though it was only 6 years ago, but it just seems so long ago.
Just very, very interesting times all around. And, well.
The match following, Hiroshi Tanahashi in a non-title match defeating Davey Richards.
Ironically enough, one of two matches that you can find in New Japan World
Of that tour. That's indeed. Yeah, we couldn't even find the IWGP title match. Tanahashi and Charlie Haas. We couldn't find that one.
Nope, not at all. But they had the Davey Richards Tanahashi match, and then they had the finals, which we're going to be covering next
year. Yeah, and then the final of the IWGP Intercontinental Championship tournament, in which MVP defeated Toru Yano to become the inaugural champion.
Which, it's interesting because to begin that match, because I was kind of rewatching it before we started the recordings today, Yano was actually on the microphone in English saying that he was, like, in New York and in New Jersey, and after coming to Philadelphia, he wanted to go back because Philadelphia sucks. But because accents and issues like that, I don't think the crowd really caught on to what he was saying. So, well,
yeah,
you know, it's
it is what it is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the and yet here we are at a time when, you know, we're about to embark on these G1 special shows in which we're going to have another IWGP belt added to the lineup during, you know, during these U.S. shows in a tournament. So the similarities are just striking between the two, but we'll opine more on that here in a little bit. And then the main event, Togi Makabe defeating the ECW veteran Rhino in an ECW style street fight at the ECW arena.
Yeah, it's what they call the Philadelphia street fight with false counting anywhere. So, yes.
And ironically, Makabe is the perfect guy on the New Japan roster to have one of these matches.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, it surprised me that they would go with that as the main event rather than the crowning of the IC Championship, but the match itself, just from reading reports and things like that, it wasn't, apparently was not a half bad match at all. It was right up their alley in terms of the brawling and stuff. So
I think one thing we've learned about Philadelphia is that Philadelphia still has not gotten over ECW. So I think that, you know, it's just completely on purpose that they did it like this, because that, you know, they'll end this tour with a very ECW style match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to send the crowd home happy.
Fair enough, definitely, but. And really, that's about it for the first big foray that New Japan did have within the United States. Obviously, we saw where that led things to down the road, obviously, with 3 years later getting a working arrangement with Ring of Honor and starting the kind of annual shows that are War of the Worlds and Global Wars that we see nowadays.
Indeed. And, let's get through some of the other aftermath points.
Absolutely, yeah.
MVP, of course, would hold that title for 5 months, defending it twice against Toriano, but then would lose it on October 10th, 2011, at Destruction 2011, to another ECW veteran, so, Masato Tanaka.
Yep, crazy enough. And then that's one thing there. And remember how we kept talking about Devitt being kind of that kingpin of the junior division for as long as he was? Well, imagine that. He holds on to the singles junior heavyweight championship for another month and then ends up losing it to Kota Ibushi in his 8th defense at Dominion that particular year.
That was true, but while Apollo 55 would still be champion for another 5 months until they lost it to Davey Richards and Rocky Romero back when they were known as the No Remorse Corps.
Mm-hmm. Again, Rocky Romero stacking up those championship junior heavyweight championship tag championship reigns rather in that situation. But of course, the big aftermath out of this was just that following that tour, Jersey All Pro Wrestling lost a lot of money on it, unfortunately.
And hopefully we're not going to see a similar situation here with given the circumstances that that Bushiroad are running these shows. I don't think they will.
No,
but
no.
Yes, but basically Jersey All Pro Wrestling ceased as a promoting entity, only promoting like an anniversary show every year. Only one out of the six Jersey All Pros would make a regulars would make another appearance for New Japan. That was Low Key,
and that bridge got burned real quick. Knowing Low Key,
kind of did. Although he would beat Prince Devitt for the IWGP Junior Championship on May 3rd, 2012 at Wrestling Dontaku. But Lance Archer did join New Japan, as you mentioned, becoming part of Suzuki-Gun. And, of course, Kenny Omega, well, I wonder what happened to him.
Yeah, totally. I'm very, very curious about this. I wonder what in the world could have possibly happened. But the two big stories out of this for me in particular, just because of how different their paths ended up being 6 years later, is Hideo Saito actually ended his excursion with that tour and found herself kind of attacking the god at Dominion that year and joining Chaos, of all things.
That's true. Hideo Saito was part of Chaos before they ended up kicking him out, and that's which would end up creating the Captain New Japan persona. Yep.
And eventually, all the years of Captain New Japan, Bone Soldier as of the recent months, and then to where now we don't even really see him at all.
Mitsuhide Hirasawa, no matter what persona he's under, is off the New Japan roster now. He is off the roster page. It's really, as far as I know, I don't know what's happened with him. I don't know if he was let go. Don't know if he quit. He may be part of the dojo now, for all we know. Mm-hmm. But it's whatever just, the case, he has not been an active wrestler since Wrestle Kingdom.
And again, it's just one of those crazy things where we go from one person that was there in that particular, getting themselves a little bit of a spotlight after their excursion, to completely disappearing, to somebody who just has become one of the biggest names in pro wrestling today. Kazuchika Okada ended up going back to TNA after that particular tour, and he did not return to New Japan Pro Wrestling until January 2012, where the repackaging as the Rainmaker ended up happening.
Yes.
Keep in mind, this happened. He had a match with Yoshihashi at that year's Wrestle Kingdom in 2012 to really kick things off. Really did not have a good match at all with Yoshihashi. The boos and everything else were just staggering, especially as he came out and challenged Hiroshi Tanahashi for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship for the following month, and people just couldn't believe it. It was like, okay, so you're just giving Tana like a free defense or something like that, and then lo and behold, 1 month later, everything changes.
Everything would change for New Japan after that, including Tanahashi getting a tooth knocked out in that match. But I mean, let's not mince words here. First of all, the match against Yoshihashi at Wrestle Kingdom 6 was not that good. Not that good of a match. The Rainmaker finish looked awkward because it was actually a different finish. He did the wrist clutch, but then he like sat into his lariat, going down, which a move, something he would abandon.
It was almost like a neck breaker of sorts. Even.
Yeah, it really was. And when he made his challenge to Tanahashi, Tanahashi had just defeated Minoru Suzuki.
Yep.
And the crowd was hot for Tanahashi. And then this punk young lion who just came back from TNA is daring to say that the Rainmaker era has begun. And the crowd, in no uncertain terms, told him to fuck off.
Pretty much.
They did. I mean, that's exactly what they chanted.
That is exactly what was chanted. And then a month later, a new beginning.
And then,
at that point, Tanahashi is going in a 13-month reign and counting as champion. And what at that time, really, they coined it as the upset of the century. And I dare say they were not wrong at the time.
Well, it was definitely a turning point for the promotion. But let's not discount how Gato put that angle on his shoulders, too, because the next day at a press conference, Kazuchika Okada would show up with Gato, and Gato would declare that Okada the Rainmaker had now joined Chaos. Okada sat there not saying a word, with his feet propped up on the table, and Gato did all the talking. So, I mean, it was clear that, if you go from there, from what Okada had done, he sounded really awkward talking to Tanahashi in that post-match promo.
It sounded exactly like what does a young punk that just had a bit of an attitude and trying to handle himself in front of as far as we know, the biggest audience he'd probably seen in his life at that particular time.
Right, and being told, the IWGP is not for you. Well, a month later, and here we are, and guess who's headlining the first night of G1 Special?
Yeah.
So
what a time.
Yeah, I mean, it is really. We like to go through on this show and look at all these time periods of New Japan, but to go on the cusp of, you know, these shows in Rahway, New Jersey, and New York and Philly, we're right on the cusp of a turning point that New Japan did not see coming, and thankfully it was, you know, for the positive too. Because usually, absolutely, when you hit these turning points, they're usually the negative. Boy, this is like an actual positive turning point that they did not see coming.
Because if you think about it with New Japan's history, too, at that particular time, we had just gotten back from basically Hiroshi Tanahashi kind of putting the company on his shoulders and bringing it back to some luster and prestige compared to where Inoki had almost left them, you know, completely buried in the early 2000s. So For this tour to actually happen was, to me, kind of a big success for New Japan's side. It was a win in their column, just in the fact that they were able to showcase themselves in front of a Western audience, even if it's just that tri-state area that's known for digesting their fair share of wrestling.
They still got
a good amount of exposure out of that particular tour, and then you go into 2012 and you see all of these different things starting to happen to it now, because, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Jeff, because obviously you have the Rainmaker obviously rising in that regard, but that was also the same year that Bullet Club also came together.
That is true. Yeah, that was true. Actually, partially in direct response to the Rainmaker, because mm-hmm. of Carl Anderson feeling he got hosed against Okada in the G1 final, so he would end up teaming with Devitt, who was trying to break the Gaijin ceiling at in New Japan, and that's why that was the origins of Bullet Club. But that's a topic for another show as well.
Yeah, we can really just talk about the year of 2012 in New Japan in general, and that be its own episode right there.
That would be, and that. But I mean, you can see some of the roots of that being laid here and at these shows in New Jersey and New York and Philly, and now we have the parallel with these shows with G1 Special in USA happening on July the 1st and 2nd from Long Beach, California. Of course, you know the difference being is that you know, New Japan is in a much better spot than they were now. They're going to even have, you know, live American broadcasts of one of the shows over, you know, over cable TV, American cable TV. And, you know, and they're gearing up for an international expansion. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, hopefully, you know, there was a consequence that was unforeseen too with Jersey All-Pro going under. So I'm just hoping that they don't take a bath with this, but considering why Bushiroad is also in town during these dates, which is that Bushiroad, the parent company of New Japan, are running their own gaming convention at the Long Beach Convention Center during this time period, in association with Anime Expo, which is happening in LA during this time. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty strategic on Bushiroad's part to run during this time.
Yeah, and Bushiroad itself, the biggest difference between then and now is that New Japan Pro Wrestling has the backing of a huge corporation in Japan that has had its fair share of profits, to where they can take a risk like this and come off of its smelling like roses in the aftermath.
Indeed.
If you could consider it, G1 Special in the USA, the tickets sold out within a couple of hours for both shows.
That's true. Yeah, these shows are sold out.
Yeah, that alone says something about the demand for the brand on the Western side of things. Even if you're just sticking to California, that's still as good of a market as you can possibly grasp within the United States.
Indeed. So I think we're going to see, just, you know, in light of Invasion Tour 2011, Attack on East Coast, I think we will just see with the G1 Special and USA shows just how much history will, in fact, repeat itself.
Yeah, and the interesting thing for us is that it's just not only seeing how those shows are going to fare, but to see where New Japan goes from here for the rest of the year and into 2018, because some really interesting things could happen if it's anything like 2011 into 2012.
Indeed. As we will all find out, again, as I said, just how much history will repeat itself. Our forthcoming episode of Strong Style History, which we hope to record sometime in July, just to give you a preview, we don't usually have these shows planned out ahead of time, but this time this was too good of a topic to pass up. We will be going through the history of the feud between Shinya Hashimoto and Naoya Ogawa on the next episode of Strong Style History, which we hope to get to you sometime in July. Our producer today is my co-host, Chris Damasceno. Chris, if you'd like to plug yourself real quick.
Right. For me, simple enough. I just have my Twitter, which is over at Brazilian_Fury. Mostly just talk wrestling, cosplay, daily life stuff, a little bit of everything, really. So that's usually where you can reach me the fastest.
I, of course, am Jeffrey Wessel. You could find me at Strong Style Story on Twitter without the E in style. The regular blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. You listen to this via Place to Be Nation, the Pro Wrestling Only podcast feed, which now features is now the home of our main show, Strong Style Story. We just recorded an episode of that going over the most recent Dominion show and previewing the G1 special shows, which we will also be doing special podcasts from, in probably quite a few of them. So stay tuned for that if you want to hear us talk some more recent New Japan goings-on. So, as I mentioned, our next Strong Style History should be sometime during the month of July, in which we will go through the feud between Shinya Hashimoto and Naoya Ogawa. On behalf of producer and co-host Chris Damasceno, I'm Jeffrey Wessel. Thank you for listening. Take care. Goodbye.